Friday, we will be live from our AM 1310 booth in Exhibit Hall E. All kind of things will be going on there. You need to come. And if you've never seen Abdul, you can come and throw peanuts at him. I didn't mean to say that because the governor walked in. I wasn't saying that you throw peanuts at Republicans. That's not. No, you don't do that. And the governor of the great state of Indiana, the Honorable Mike Pence, is in the House. Governor, how you doing?
I'm doing great, Amos. Great to be back. Good to see you. And excited about being over at Indiana Black Expo today.
Speaking of Expo, you opened the Expo at the Ecumenical Service, and you touched on a subject that not only I knew people in Indianapolis were talking about, there was the violence in our neighborhoods. Right. I didn't realize that we also had problems in other areas of the state. But you addressed the importance of communities coming together.
Well, obviously, our hearts are heavy in this community with the violence that has beset our youth. Mm-hmm. But as you pointed out, there are other communities in the state of Indiana that are struggling in similar fashion. Gary, Indiana, is having a very difficult summer.
Five murders in 5 days, something like that?
It's just been heartbreaking. And we're in touch with the mayor up there. I know we had Indiana State Police personnel met with Mayor Karen Wilson Freeman's team late last week to talk about options and opportunities. But, you know, at the end of the day, law enforcement plays a critical role, a vital role, but it pales in comparison to the impact that communities coming together, that particularly communities of faith coming together, and really what's been commented on publicly, by people involved in the public safety arena in Indianapolis, and that is just the vital importance of strong families as a foundation for a long-term solution to the issue of violence among our young people.
Are we at a point, Governor, where you, whether that's through the leadership of the Department of Faith-Based or whether that's through the Commission on African American Males, whether it's time for a commission on Hoosier families?
Well, let me say, and you remember my State of the State address, and you might be one of the few people that do, but I talked about the importance of, beyond all of the debates over social and cultural issues, what is inarguable is that we want to encourage more young people to get married, stay married, and wait to have kids until they get married. And finding ways that we can do that will bring people together and not divide people along those traditional argument lines, I think is enormously important. It's something our administration is paying careful attention to. And your idea, the idea of having a conference on the family where we would bring together a broad range of diverse perspectives about how we can encourage more family formation, it's an idea whose time has come, and it's one that I think thought leaders on the right and on the left are increasingly in broad agreement that we've just got to do more to promote intact two-parent families.
Indianapolis is a state capital. Yeah. State property is right there in the middle of our downtown. During the 4th of July ceremony, there were a number of members of the legislature of both parties that were concerned about some of the unescorted youth that came, had fights on that north parking lot on the State House grounds.
Okay.
Are you concerned in that there's not enough being done to make sure that the property of the People's House is being safe in downtown, and that as the city and as the Indianapolis community talk about how we deal with downtown, that the state needs to be part of that conversation? Because, again, I talked to your good friend, Senator Mike Delve, about how disturbed he was with his family on the 4th of July evening. And I tried to, having been downtown in some of those kind of situations, tried to give him some perspective that he could share with his lovely daughters. In that, but it also, he's a legislator, he can propose laws, and he might get some stuff passed.
Well, I think what it invites is a recognition that Indianapolis is in and of itself an important city, but it's also our capital city. It's the home of our state capital. I think what it does contemplate is maybe a greater sense of partnership about how we make sure that all these treasures that we have in our capital city are available to every Hoosier. particularly on events like the 4th of July. But I have to tell you that it's not about the buildings.
Mm-hmm.
It's about the people.
Mm-hmm.
And it's one of the reasons why, you know, we've put a real emphasis in our administration on thinking outside the box on issues related to family and on issues that are particularly tearing away at the fabric of families. And I specifically make reference to this cycle of recidivism in mm-hmm. prison that makes it almost impossible for some neighborhoods and some communities right. in Indiana to really have a chance to come back together, because you have, you know, you have 4,000 people come out of the Department of Corrections and returned, for instance, to the city of Indianapolis every year.
Right.
They did the crime, they did their time, they're coming home. The heartbreaking piece is that in many cases, more than half of those people are back in prison within 18 months.
Hmm.
Now, that should tell you something in the real world. And I don't have to tell you about the challenges facing this community. Nobody knows it better. But for Hoosiers that are not so well-versed is to understand that you have people that are coming in and out of these communities, in and out of families, and probably the most impactful thing that we can do
right.
is to break the cycle of recidivism that's besetting families. We hold people accountable for the choices that they make, but we're looking at alternative incarceration programs, faith-based programs, ways, community-based corrections that are allowed under the new law, so that we can, early on, when that young person makes a wrong choice and they pay for their crime, mm-hmm. we do everything in our power to make that a one-time experience.
When will we start seeing the fruit of that? I know you've got the Department of Corrections working on some things. I'm about to ask you about the Career Council that you appointed members to this week.
Yeah.
You know, people sit listening said, you know, I'm listening to that Mike Pence guy. I'm trying to give him the benefit of the doubt. It sounds good.
Yeah.
But, you know, folks, talk is cheap. When are we going to see some rubber on the road?
Yeah, real cheap. And let me say that with regard to the Department of Corrections, we're going to have some announcements this summer
mm-hmm.
about some new innovative programs that have already been introduced, but we're going to be minting and making even more public regarding certain prison facilities and also certain programs that are going to be on an increasing basis available. I'm particularly focusing on first-time offenders.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, with the crime bill that we just passed,
right.
A lot of the people that have in recent years headed off to the Department of Corrections, you know, we sent them up to the prison.
Right.
A lot of them are now going to be dealt with in community corrections. They're going to be much more accessible to their family, to their faith community, to the people that can best influence them as they go through a community corrections program. Today, I'm handing out the honorees at the governor's reception at
right.
Indiana Black Expo. One of those folks
right.
is Reverend Eugene Potter, who's been running New Life Development Ministries, which is a reentry program
yes, it is.
In this community. So we're doing that on community corrections. It's in effect. On the workforce issues, I'm happy to tell you everything is happening on that. We are moving forward at full speed to make career and vocational education a priority in every high school in the state of Indiana, and I'm incredibly excited with the team that we put together.
Are those high schools, though, going to have, Governor, the resources to do that? Because or that high school principal or that high school the district superintendent is going to say, wait a minute,
yeah.
I only got so much.
Right.
They're putting pressure on me to send kids to college. How can I take money away from the college track to do this?
Right. The short answer to that is yes.
Mm-hmm.
We're building public. I have rarely put my hand on an issue. It's like touching the stove here.
Right.
This issue is so white hot from your first phone call to me.
Right. To people that you've seen all across the state.
All across the state of Indiana have said to me, you know, I remember you called me the day I announced this a year and a half ago. And
right.
I said, look, I just think we ought to make career and vocational education a priority in every high school. You called me up and said, I've been 15 years I've been saying that, and
mm-hmm.
everybody's been telling me, hey, no, this is all about everybody's got to go to college,
mm-hmm.
and you've been a champion out there
right.
for career education in high school. But what I can tell you is that on the resource side, there's two ways it's going to work. Number one is certainly, as we go through the process, I will launch tomorrow in Terre Haute,
mm-hmm.
of creating these regional work councils.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to bring businesses and educators together. We're going to say, what does a curriculum need to look like in this area to create career pathways in high school for kids who want to go get a job instead of getting a degree right away?
So it's not going to be a one-size-fits-all from Indianapolis.
It's regional.
Regional.
And the second piece is, on the resource side, will there probably be an additional state commitment, taxpayer commitment. My expectation is there will be, and we'll meet those obligations. But I just met a week ago today with the U.S. ambassador from Germany, who was in town. In Germany, they've had a very similar system to what we're talking about for decades. They do it on a regional basis as well, and 75% of the cost of their vocational education program is actually borne by businesses in that region
looking for
who help support the career and technical education in that area. And make no mistake about it, I'm more than willing to go at some point and ask taxpayers to help make this happen. And we've already set aside millions of dollars to promote and to develop it. But I'm absolutely going to be going to businesses all over this state and saying, if we're going to let you help us design the curriculum in the local schools.
where the beef?
And where's the beef? But I got to tell you, every time I've had that conversation, Amos, business leaders look at me and say, where do I write the check? Because they're spending this money now training the workforce that they're out recruiting to meet their needs. As we contemplate a partnership with education in high school and in secondary education, I don't think it's going to be a very hard sell to get business more involved.
We're talking with the governor. Speaking of money, all right, we got $1 billion sitting in the bank. We got $1 billion surplus. You paid off some
$1.94 billion.
$2 billion. You paid off some of the credit card bills and some of the mortgages.
Yeah.
So there are people listening and saying, wait a minute, Governor, can't you break off a little bit of that money back to the schools? Can't you break off a little extra piece, like a bonus check or something?
Yeah. And the good news is we did. Mm-hmm. It's not been as widely reported, and that may be my fault. But we restored significant education spending in K through 12 education. We expanded the educational scholarship voucher program. We also made a historic contribution to increasing funding for local communities for roads. And we set aside long-term resources to continue to have the best infrastructure system. We did all of that at the same time that we balanced our budget and we cut taxes across the board for every Hoosier. So the resources are there. We have an increase in funding for traditional education. We were able to do all of that and still close out this fiscal year in a way that our reserves are at the largest maximum level they can be. And like you said, we're gonna burn another mortgage on a public building and save taxpayers millions of dollars.
Now, I think I found a way to find you some extra money. I don't know. I'm sure you watched the tape of the legislative hearing when the folks from ISTEP came in and said they didn't have enough servers, they didn't have enough this, they unanticipated that. Now, we've both been in broadcasting. If the radio stations that you and I work for, if they messed up running the advertisers' commercials the wrong way or something, the advertiser what? They wouldn't pay the bill. Hoosiers are asking, why are we going to pay this $94 million bill for ISTEP when they messed up? Can't we keep that money and maybe break off a piece to our schools here and there? That's $90 million.
Well, let me say, first and foremost, I want to be very deferential to our State Superintendent Glenda Ritz, who I think has been doing very good work on this issue. She's already she leaned into this effort. She and I meet on a semi-regular basis. I've been in her office and in my office. We reached out to her and frankly commended her for getting with the vendor, which in this case is McGraw-Hill, that's administered the test, and say this is just simply unacceptable. I mean, and not just as a governor, but as a parent. Yeah. As the husband of a career elementary school teacher, I know the stress that
did
we
the
put
first
these
lady
kids
go
through.
Off when she heard that excuse?
I don't even want to get into it. What I want to tell you,
Kara's laughing, I mean, like, oh yeah, look,
It is enough stress for these kids. And look, we got to measure performance, so we got to do these exams. But for heaven's sakes, when you get them wrong. When they aren't administered properly, and that's the other thing we want to make sure. And I'm pleased the superintendent's doing this. We've done two things. Number one, we've indicated that we are gonna pursue damages for the cost here. It's more than $500,000 for starters, and maybe much higher than that. And we fully support the superintendent pursuing that on the behalf of the state of Indiana. But the other piece of this is we've also contracted with a firm that's going to evaluate whether there's statistical evidence that the misadministration of these exams has in any way prejudiced our kids.
Right.
Because we don't want the fact that it had to be administered in a delayed way and that there were problems. We don't want that affecting our kids and our outcome and their success and our state's success.
And I know she's an independent elected official, just right. as you are. But in hindsight, shouldn't there have been paper backup for everybody? Again, hindsight 2020.
I don't want to prejudge it. I will tell you that McGraw-Hill has done a largely good job for the state of Indiana in the past. There have been problems before, but this one, in my judgment, was of a magnitude that I'm just grateful Superintendent Ritz has leaned into it. We're getting answers, and we're going to make sure the people of Indiana are made whole. And most importantly, we're going to make sure that the misadministration of this test does not in any way harm our kids' future or our schools' assessment.
We may have time for a couple calls with the governor. 239-1310, 239-1310. Now, they put your name again on the front page of the paper, saying that you have ordered an IEDC review.
Right.
There's been some mess with these folk ever since you came in. Are we at a point where there needs to be a top-to-bottom review of that whole IEDC structure?
Well, look, I think, you know from day one, I've said we're going to make job creation job one. Mm-hmm. And we've had a lot of successes. I can tell you I'm going to be back up for a big announcement at GEICO's headquarters here that you might very airwaves.
Oh, yeah, they've come in a mighty way.
There are jobs
coming. The geckos
are
everywhere.
They are looking for people. Mm-hmm. There are jobs and opportunities. And let me just say, the Indiana Economic Development Corporation, I meet with this team every week. They are doing a very effective job working with businesses that are looking to grow in Indiana or looking to come to Indiana. And I'm very grateful for the team there, grateful for the board members that are there. The issues that were raised in the newspaper this past weekend with regard to the firm that makes investment recommendations, that it was designed as an outside non-state agency that could encourage more entrepreneurship in Indiana, I think have raised questions that it's appropriate for us to have a third-party review. Mm-hmm. And so we're going to contract with not another state agency. We're going to contract with an outside organization that will look at the business practices mm-hmm. and financial decisions in that relationship, and I'm looking forward to receiving that report. But look, we've got to operate, and contractors for the state,
right.
contractors for IEDC, which is a quasi-state organization. My expectation as governor is everybody operates in a manner that represents the highest ethics and is above reproach, and we're going to look into this very deeply with that standard in mind.
239-1310, 239-1310 with the governor of Indiana. All right, less than 3 months, it's going to be open enrollment for the Affordable Care Act, or as the president now says, it's Obamacare. I'm Obama and I care. Hey, he said it. I didn't say it. Where are we on this? I mean, we're playing chicken, and maybe I'm not characterizing it fairly. But you've said, hey, I want to do this. I want to do this right. I want to be able to expand Medicaid. But, mm-hmm. hey, I want to incorporate it in something that I feel works, and that's the HIP, Healthy Indiana Plan.
Right.
The government has said, no, it's our way or the highway. What's going to happen when we get to open enrollment and it's showtime?
Yeah, I got you. Well, first, let's recognize, you know, the president does call it Obamacare, so that's not a pejorative term.
Yeah.
That's just a descriptive of the health care plan. I really think that it's a work in a state of flux right now. Mm-hmm. I mean, the administration just announced around the 4th of July that they're going to delay the employer mandate until 2015. Mm-hmm. I know that a congressman from Indiana is going to have a bill on the floor of the Congress this week that will say, well, if we're delaying the employer mandate, for an extra year, why don't we delay the individual mandate for another year while we continue to try and figure out if this thing will work? Mm-hmm. You know, I do think that there's no question in my mind, big picture comment, no question in my mind that the uncertainty over healthcare costs, the uncertainty over this policy is dampening our economy nationally and here in Indiana. As we travel around the state, frankly, we hear from employers on a regular basis that the uncertainty around this issue is causing them to hold back mm-hmm. on hiring decisions or expansion decisions that would create jobs and opportunities. That's a bigger picture issue. In terms of the Medicaid expansion that the Affordable Care Act permits, before it mandated that states would expand Medicaid,
right.
That changed, and so now Indiana may expand Medicaid. I've said two things. Number one is I'm open to considering an expansion of Medicaid as long as it, number one, is fiscally responsible. And number two, it preserves Indiana's ability to continue to innovate with consumer-driven health care like the Healthy Indiana Plan. What I can report to you is all the way through last Friday, we are in regular discussions and negotiations with Health and Human Services.
So they've not said, Mike Pence, we love you, but quit knocking on our door.
No, we are not. We are in active negotiations, trading ideas. I expect to be talking to Secretary Sebelius within the next week to 10 days specifically about this issue. And we continue to say that, look, our starting point for considering any expansion of Medicaid is can we continue to do it in a way that has been so successful? You know, the Healthy Indiana Plan is almost universally approved by the people that are enrolled in the program today. It moves people from emergency room care to primary care. It encourages right choices. It requires people to invest a bit every month in their own health insurance. And I think it's right for recipients. I think it's right for Indiana's fiscal health, and we're going to continue to champion it. But, you know, I do want your listeners and you to know that we're working real hard,
right,
in good faith with the administration in Washington to see if we can move forward on that basis. Last point.
Yeah.
My goal in life is not to expand the roles of Medicaid. I would like to see less people on Medicaid. I would like to see more people who have a good paying job, and they reach that income threshold where they have the ability and access to affordable health insurance because they're prospering and they're succeeding. My goal is I'd like to see those roles dwindled because Indiana's economy is growing and expanding. That's my focus.
I got an email at praiseindy.com, wants to know, has the governor appointed African-Americans and Latinos to state boards since his term began? And are there any African-Americans and Latinos on the parole board? And what is your pardon policy? I do know that's where Virgil Madden is it on the parole board, as I understand. Is that correct?
Yes, actually. We just he's leading that effort for us.
Mm-hmm.
Virgil Madden is an outstanding individual. Happens to be African American, but he's just a man of really unparalleled integrity and experience. You mentioned the Career Council.
Yeah.
I'm just very excited because he's been such an inspiration to me.
Gary Hobbs.
And I'm going to see Gary later this week.
Because he's opening up this a senior citizen apartments up in the Devington area.
Yeah. Well, here's a guy who's very successful. Has had a career at Eli Lilly and is an entrepreneur. But here's a guy who from go is giving back to the community. And I don't know if I ever told you this story, but it was about a year and a half ago. I'm talking about my commitment. I'll keep it short.
No, that's another code for Chris. There.
Okay, all right, good. I thought you were.
Governor's seeing me do gang signs. He's trying to figure out which one is which.
No, I saw a little signal. I thought I meant wrap it up. I'm giving a talk about a year and a half ago, and this is when this idea of career vocational education was very new.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, gosh, I just think it ought to be like it used to be. We ought to have career vocational education in every high school. I give this speech up on the north side. Gary Hobbs follows me out of the meeting and stops me in the parking lot. And that's when our friendship was really minted. He's a tremendous individual. He and his wife are wonderful people. He's a man of faith and integrity and tremendous accomplishment. But he stops and he says to me, hey, I want you to know, I really think you're right on this issue.
Right.
In fact, I think you're so right, I've already been doing it. And I said, what do you mean you've been doing it? And he said, well, there's a local high school. I just went to them, he said, about a year ago, and I said, can I work out something with you with my construction business where give me four of your guys who have an interest in learning building trades, and would you give them to me a couple afternoons a week and give them some curriculum credit for it?
Right.
And he said, I'll take them, I'll teach them, and if I can work in cooperation with the school, this can be a win-win for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And he told me at that time that he was overwhelmed with the response that he'd gotten from the four young men, every one of which was facing some challenges in their academic career at that point.
Mm-hmm.
Not only were they successful in the program that he plugged them into, but the school reported that every single one of them was doing better in all their other coursework.
Right. Okay.
And he said, and frankly, three out of four of them I'd hire the minute they graduated from high school because they're just really sharp guys. and they got bright futures and they could own businesses of their own someday. That's that conversation with Gary was one of the single most important early conversations I had on this issue. So when we formed this statewide Indiana Council. Career Council, mm-hmm. I needed to find somebody to represent business.
That's Gary.
I had three names on the list, Gary mm-hmm. Hobbs, Gary Hobbs, and Gary Hobbs, and he took the gig.
Let me go to the phones and in Motep at 239-1310. Hi there.
Hey, how's my name?
Fine.
All right, Governor, how you doing? With all due respect, how's
I'm good. Going? Thanks.
All right, yeah, just got two quick questions if you might want to answer. I am a professional in the medical field. I deal with medical devices. Not taking those exchanges has kind of hurt. I'm sure you're familiar with St. Vincent's getting rid of 800 people. Jobs have been stifled amongst all the hospitals. I have friends that work in all of them. And jobs have been stifled in all the hospitals right now. Equipment buying has been down. Doctors are not buying equipment. Dentists are not buying equipment. Everyone is worried about the exchanges.
Sure.
I don't know the details of the ACA, but a 10-to-1 exchange sounds not too bad. If the taxpayers of the country are paying taxes, we got an increase in payroll taxes recently. Why shouldn't that money at least go to try to help the taxpayers at least that are paying taxes, not people who may not have a way of making a living that are on Medicare, Medicaid? So it is hurting business. And then number two, they're touting the surplus and stuff like that. Why come it's not a possibility to help to strengthen Indiana, people like me who want to continue education for postgraduate degrees or those looking for their undergraduate degree? Why wouldn't some of that money be used to give unencumbered tuition paid and then have a requirement for those people to work 3, 4, 5 years back in the state like they do in Georgia and other states? And, I'll take your response. Thank you.
That's a great question. Governor? Oh, he has a whole bunch of stuff.
Well, I mean, two very, very important and intelligent questions. I commend the caller. Let me say that working in the healthcare space, I was very pleased. We announced a couple weeks ago that we were able to increase the reimbursement rate to our hospitals. Mm-hmm. Didn't make a big fuss about it, right. But we had the resources to do it. We announced it. It was extremely well received by hospitals around the state of Indiana, and I just thought it was the right thing to do.
Are you concerned by these cuts by the St. Vincent Empire, by the IU Empire, saying they got to cut $1 billion worth of expense, and with that kind of expense, that includes some people down the road?
Well, I am concerned about it, and it represents a challenge that a lot of our healthcare providers are facing. Some of that, ironically, has to do with increased healthcare costs mm-hmm. for them, increased health insurance costs. And, we've seen not only hospitals, but also we've seen school corporations laying off part-time people to get right. themselves back underneath the 50 or under employees level. Mm-hmm. So, but be that as it may, on the exchanges issue, let me be very, very clear with the caller. Indiana will participate in the federal exchange. Mm-hmm. We are at the Family and Social Services Agency right now. We're working very diligently to do Indiana's part to make sure that Hoosiers who are eligible to participate in the exchanges have every opportunity to do that. We didn't see the value in Indiana running a healthcare exchange mm-hmm. or running an exchange with or for the federal government. But we're working very diligently to make sure that Hoosiers have access to the
And as I
exchange.
Understand, and correct me if I'm wrong, Governor, the exchanges are nothing more than you go into – like you go into a restaurant
yeah.
and you order, something off – okay, what do you want off of this menu? What do you mm-hmm. want off of this menu? What vision do you want? What medical do you want? What dental do you want? Pick the plan, figure out the benefits, figure out the price, and go do it.
Yeah, that's the idea. And it's frankly, we have those kind of exchanges already in various parts of the country and in various parts of the insurance industry. It's essentially an attempt to create a marketplace. What's different here is that Hoosiers will be faced with a mandate to purchase health insurance, mm-hmm. and these exchanges will exist as a place where people can go and to one degree or another find insurance that's more affordable than it otherwise would be. Some of the numbers that are coming out, and it's going to come out in about a week, right. Individual policies are going to be a lot more expensive than even some early estimates suggested. So it's one of the reasons why I'm just very pleased. Congressman Todd Young, I think, has authored the legislation that says, okay, if we're going to delay And this is a, you know, Amos Brown is nothing but a, you're all about fairness. It's right. one of the reasons why right. I admire you and respect you. If the administration in Washington says we're going to delay the employer mandate on big corporations in America, mm-hmm. why wouldn't you delay the individual mandate on individual taxpaying Americans and just say, look, if we all just decide we need more time to figure this thing out, then I think it only stands to reason that we ought to let taxpayers have that extra year that we're given major corporations in America.
239-1310. Let me go to Larry. Hi there.
How you doing, Governor?
Hi, Larry.
And Amos.
Hi.
You know, you talk about industrial training. How can you set up in there and talk about that when you know that the state of Indiana has a plan to have all our schools online, and if not online, to have the vouchers given out and have these other schools, which the superintendent does not have any jurisdiction on, so they can't force that curriculum of industrial training on them. So what you're talking about really won't come to pass. And on your prison initiative and your community prison and so forth, Senate Bill 231 has various provisions. One of the provisions is for community health centers. The function of these community health centers is when somebody is released from prison to keep them in chemical restraint. They have to check in. The only thing that they're planned for our reentry programs is a situation where a person's been on chemical restraint, and it's a mandatory that you take these chemical restraints or you end up back in the prison system, which is somehow worse. But I think it's really disingenuous, Governor, to come on and talk about you want industrial training when you know that over half of the kids that are going to these grammar schools and so forth are on dope, and they're not going to go anywhere near a power tool. So I think that we need to be more sincere if you're going to come on and talk to people about improvements.
Governor?
Well, I'm very sincere about it. And I, although I have to say to Larry, I think skepticism with regard to government is a good thing. Mm-hmm. And holding people like me accountable to their words. But I just watch. I think you're going to be surprised pleasantly with the way Indiana moves into this issue of career and vocational education. I'm a strong supporter of educational choice, for particularly for underprivileged families, to let them choose whatever school they determine is best for their kids, public or private. But look, we got 1 million kids in school in Indiana today. The overwhelming majority of those kids are and will remain in our public schools. Those remain under the purview of the State Board of Education. We're going to be driving this issue on a regional basis to make sure that while, and I want to say to every child in Indiana, every child within the sound of my voice during this summer months, don't ever let anybody tell you that you can't go to college. We will find a way. If you will work hard, study hard, stay away from things that can destroy your life, you can go to college. But I want to start saying just as passionately to young men and women, if you want to go get a job after high school, as opposed to getting a degree right away, we want the high school to work well for you, too.
I happen to know Larry's a master glazier, does excellent work with glass. So if somebody wants to be the next Larry in terms of his craft, they ought to have that opportunity.
Why do they have to? Well, that's wonderful to hear, and much continued success to you, Larry. What I would say, and I mean this, is I want to give kids an opportunity to have an exposure to become a master glazier in high school, because right now pretty much what we're doing is you want to get career training, you want to get industry certification, you go through high school, you get kind of a college preparatory high school diploma, and then after that you can go to school or you can pursue an apprenticeship or you can get certification. I want to see that brought into the high school level, and I want, make no mistake about it, it's the right thing to do. I also think, Amos, this is going to contribute to graduation rates going up. Because the more our kids see, you made this point to me early, mm-hmm. and I've since been able to quantify it, the more our kids see the relevance of a high school diploma to their life and the career that they want to live, mm-hmm. the more they're going to stick in there and be successful getting that degree.
Who else is being honored here in a few minutes when you go back downtown to the convention center, the governor's reception?
Yeah, we've got actually 13 award recipients. Mrs. Pence and I are going to be at the governor's reception together this afternoon. But three from Indianapolis. I mentioned Reverend Eugene A. Potter, mm-hmm. New Life Development Ministries in Indianapolis, a reentry program. Willie Haynes, who founded the ABC Barber and Beauty School program, right. A fantastic effort to promote entrepreneurship. And it's gone statewide. It's incredibly impressive. Mm-hmm. Willie's done a great job. And, of course, Eunice Trotter, Mary Bateman Clark Enterprises, we're going to give her the Achievement in Cultural Heritage. She obviously is a relation to Mary Clark, who's a lawsuit virtually ended slavery in Indiana. And she herself is just an enormously iconic and important figure.
A couple quick things. Speaking of jobs, you're interviewing people for a job. Happens to be state auditor to fill out the unexpired term of current state auditor.
You want to be state
Tim
auditor?
Barrett. I don't think I meet the party requirement to be state auditor.
That might be right.
Yeah, I think the bookkeeping requirement maybe. But I understand a couple of the people you've interviewed have been minority. One's a Hispanic lady from up in Hamilton County. The other is the head of the town council in beautiful Brownsburg, is African American. Your party has never, to my knowledge, nominated or placed in office at a statewide level a minority. And I know you're going to pick the best person for the job, regardless of their race or ethnicity. But is that maybe a factor in the back of your mind, maybe sending a message, your party sending a message through this appointment? Because you want somebody not just to sit there till next year. You want them to be able to run and beat whoever the Democrats find to run against.
Right. I was interviewing some people yesterday afternoon. Who've expressed an interest in this. And look, we're talking to a broad range of men and women of tremendous talent and ability. You've obviously taken yourself out of consideration.
Yeah, I've taken myself out of consideration.
I don't think
I'd make it through the primary.
I wouldn't make it through yours either. So we're just even. Let me just say this from my heart. As I think through this and pray through this, this is a decision that I will make about putting someone in a position of enormous importance in the life of our state, and also someone who I would hope would be a contributing leader for many years to come in Indiana. And so as I reflect on it and pray about it, I'm putting the interest of the people of Indiana first and in the forefront, and that's how we'll make that decision.
Finally, when you were in broadcasting, the National Association of Broadcasters had not created their big award that they give to people in radio called the Marconi Awards for Outstanding Achievement.
Did you win another one?
No. This year – hold on now. You're getting ahead of yourself here. This year, there's three Hoosiers who are Marconi finalists. One, WMEE Radio up in Fort Wayne that I know you're familiar with.
Sure.
One, the radio station right next to the wall that you're in, WTLC-FM.
Outstanding.
And then they decided to give me another opportunity to be a finalist and probably not get the trophy.
Congratulations.
You know what happens to folks.
Well, the nomination is just about as good as winning it.
I figure Cary Grant was nominated for Oscars, never got one.
Yeah, you're like the Susan Lucci of the Marconis. How many times was she nominated?
Oh, 10 or 11 times. I got 9 more times to go.
Well, congratulations.
So you'll be you're doing the reception tonight, this afternoon.
Yeah, we are.
You'll be at the luncheon?
Oh, of course. Of course, wouldn't miss it. It's Friday, isn't it?
It's Friday.
Yeah.
Spike Lee.
Yeah.
He might say something. You know, he doesn't.
It's, I was actually at Madison Square Garden last time Spike. And he won't be bringing basketball up this year.
You know who just joined the Knicks? Meta World Peace.
Yeah, yeah.
The athlete formerly known as Ron. Now I have something to ask. I kept wondering, what do you ask Spike Lee, who never gives any interviews to anybody? Now I can ask him what he feels about.
Can I tell you my one New York story, my Pacer story?
Yeah.
So I'm in New York City the day of Game 4 of the Pacers and Knicks.
Right.
Right. I see a guy walking across the lobby of the hotel, and he's wearing a huge Pacers shirt. So I yell, "Go Pacers!" across this New York City lobby. Right. And Coach Frank Vogel spins around and looks at me. And I look at him. And he smiles, and I smile, and he said, "Are you from Indiana?"
Did he vote? Did somebody check his voter registration?
I said, "I'm going to the game tonight." Good to see you.
Good to see you. That's a good one. That'll be in Mike Pence's gubernatorial memoirs. The governor of the great state of Indiana, Mike Pence.